think we'll get started. Good afternoon. It's always challenging to be, and hopefully you can hear me all right with my voice. Air conditioning going in and out, it's starting to go on me, so I'll try and keep lubricated with some water here and we'll go from there. It's always tough being on the Friday, sort of the last day of Tech Ed, and you're the last sort of presenter, and everyone's like got their bags here and they're going to shoot off to the airport. Anyway, welcome. This is a Virtualizing Microsoft Link Server 2013, Planning and Architecture. My name is Campbell Gunn. I'm a principal lead program manager in Microsoft. I actually work in Link team, been there for about 4.5 years now. Went through and on Link Server 2010 and 2013. And mine sort of areas are all the boring stuff that people sort of say to me. It's like we're in the manageability stack, and think of it like, how do I install it, the setup? How do I do certificates? How do I install CMS and the topology? All of those pieces, virtualization, of course. And so I have sort of this split brain. I also look after the manageability stack for Link Online in Office 365, as well as our on-premise product. And so, yeah, let's get started. So what I'm going to talk to you about is how to understand and size Link Server 2013 virtualization. How we approached it in Microsoft, we actually took real customer hardware, went to HP and said, we want to build out a lab that represents a customer, virtualize everything, and go through and understand just some of the pitfalls, some of the things that we crank up the number of users, and we did that and saw at which point did it fall over, and then we started ratcheting it down to see just the effects of that. We'll talk about some key health indicators. I'll show you a couple of places where you can download a couple of documents that's relevant to this and performance metrics. We'll also talk about testing and stressing approach as well, all right? And this is probably an important point to think about. So let me just quickly switch machine here. I just want to show you a couple places to go here. The first one, this is actually on the download center. You can download this white paper. It's actually in more detail what I'm going to talk about in the presentation. I'm going to give you the pitfalls and sometimes some of the things that you just got to watch in sort of concert to what's in this white paper. So download the white paper. And then the other one that you definitely need to get your hands on is this one, which is the actual Link Stress Guide. And again, this has the key health indicators. It talks about the Link Stress Tool. Who's heard of the Link Stress Tool? It's about, right, not a lot of people have it. It's a very, very important tool. I can't stress it enough, no pun intended. And it definitely allows you really to really understand just the type of workload in the default user profile, what type of workload you can employ on your Link Server environment, regardless of whether it's physical or virtual. This tool will apply to both. So if you've got a physical environment and you're thinking about virtualization, you can apply it to both here. So definitely get these two white papers and download them and start reading. You're all probably going to flip open your laptops now and do that. All right. So I have to put the typical marketing slide in here. Why virtualize? Obviously, it's to reduce our costs, our infrastructure costs. Also, to create more value and faster, low-cost services. You know, one interesting one that you could also think about in this as well is that I've come across a lot of customers that have older applications that are perhaps running on Windows Server 2003. They can't, you know, they want to get off that and then run newer operating systems, new applications, but they still need to maintain those line of business applications that are dependent on that operating system. So they virtualize to be able to cater for that until they can move off that platform, move off that line of business application to something else. With reduced total cost of ownership, you can see here that we want to, server consolidation is our interesting one, and leverage existing resources. Existing resources, you can think about that is, which comes in the last point there, your admin to server ratio, right? Which is always, if you're got a large server infrastructure data center, then you're always constantly looking at how many administrators do I need to administer 100, 200 servers. What's that ratio? So virtualization can also help with that. Also with virtualizing is better capacity and planning. So you're able to plan more concisely of what you're going to have your applications on, have Link Server running on a virtualized platform, and you can plan appropriately for that. You don't have to wait for 3 months, 4 months for new hardware to come in and then get it racked, get it powered, and so forth, networked. So that's another aspect that's certainly... So Why virtualize here? Well, let's just talk about the virtualized workloads. Who looked at the virtualization white paper in 2010? You'll see when you download the paper for 2013, it is radically different. And one of the reasons is it got a little bit confusing in the 2010 paper. And so very similar here. You can see all of the various workloads that are supported. It's all workloads. If you have anyone running LCS, got to ask. Hopefully not. I just got to ask, right, because there's only like three workloads that are support virtualization in LCS. But anyway, so we can virtualize all the workloads. You can see here IAM and presence, conferencing, PSTN, enterprise voice, video, audio, video, and so forth here is an important one. You can virtualize archive and monitoring databases. The only thing is just think about when you're stress testing, just the load that's going to put on that. I found that it wasn't a big deal. We were concerned originally for IOPS, just how bad it would be, but it turned out to be very negligible. The other thing to think about as well is resource abstraction. So having a shared infrastructure, you can actually have with CPU, memory, network, and disk, so you can share that infrastructure across your workloads. And you can also then use templates and start creating your virtualization templates. So it's not talking about sysprep per se, because remember with Linksys, when you've got the OS and the applications in the OS that you install, and then you have to install Link on top of that. You can't just go and have a sysprep for the entire Link stack, remember? Because there's a number of places where the server name is hard-coded. You can't, when you install it, and you can't template it. All right. So let's talk about hypervisor here. So with that, the validated hypervisors, Server 2012, Hyper-V, Windows Hyper-V, Server 2012 as well. Other hypervisors you can see there as well. The Windows Server 2012, two Hyper-V, and also the other one. So we validate them, which means supported. So validated, supported, which is the important thing we always look at, right? And then you've got the other hypervisors there. Let's just talk about 2008. This was a big thing that we were waiting for in the Link product group when we transitioned from 2010 to 2013 and Windows Server 2012 was coming out. Okay, Windows, who tried to or who is still virtualizing on Windows Server 2008 R2? Yes, because one of it is that the amount of virtual cores that you're limited, the amount of memory you're also limited as well in Server 2008 R2. So also there was a knowledge base article where you actually have to go in and download this patch, and basically what it was to do was to address network packet loss. So anyway, you're not running it, so one thing to add there is that Windows Server obviously 2008 is not supported. Hypervisor, let's talk about overhead. This is probably the one that you need to be really conscious of when you're stress testing, and that is that you need to take on top. And you see here typically an overhead of 6 to 10% we were seeing. We're even seeing 6 to 15% actually when we did some of the stressing of the loads going from 5,000 users, 10, 15, 20, 30, 35, and then to 40. And this should be above and beyond what your virtual guest requires. So here you've got the easiest way to think about with Server 2013, Link Server 2013 and Hyper-V compared to 2010 was you literally take the physical requirements and drop them straight into your virtualization, right? So if you've got the hex core, 32 gig of RAM, your amount of 8 spindles, take that for your front end, that's exactly what you pick up and virtualize in the guest. Those people, a few people here with 2010, it got confusing, right? Because they used to say, oh, you do this, and we just said, no, we're going to keep it simple. Whatever it is physical, you virtualize. One of the things you need to think about with that overhead is it involves both the CPU and memory. What was interesting was network, it wasn't as bad as we thought when we did the testing. We found it was more CPU bound and more memory bound. So you need to think about that. There was some increase due to the virtualization layer of what was happening. Remember, it's software on software, right? You're not going directly to the physical hardware, it's software on software. So you've got a layer of abstraction that you need to be conscious about. So there was a talk about sysprep earlier, that you cannot run sysprep to create the machine image templates after Linkers server is installed. And also then you use your OS templates to apply the appropriate prerequisites. All right, this is the one that I get questions all the time about, right? It's the most controversial one. And that is that live migration and quick migration are not supported, right? And you can see some of the things here. It's real-time traffic. So pulling the real-time traffic, like you've got a conference going and you want to then move someone or you want to like literally take the rug from underneath them and they've got a conference going, you'll stop the conference, right? It'll stop. And what happens then is that it'll go into resiliency mode. So if you try to do anything like this, it'll go into resiliency mode and then you'll start having issues. So here you can move virtual machines, right? Running on links here between hosts. You got to shut it down completely. An outage will happen as a result, all right? So that means that the clients will see that connect, disconnect, right? And also any active conferences will also be ended. Memory, so dynamic memory is not supported on any of the roles. And memory must not be over-provisioned, right? Because you'll starve the guest VMs. So what's happening here is Link Server 2013 is looking for a particular allocating of resources, the allocation of memory, and saying, I've got this amount of memory to utilize, right? And all the services, when they spin up, they're looking for that amount of memory, right, to start utilizing it. And if you start saying, here's the memory, oh, here's no memory, you starve them. And you get really sporadic results. 1 minute conference works, 1 minute conference doesn't work. You know, we tried all these different things to see just what would happen to the product. And you get some very bizarre things happening as a result of it. Let's talk about virtual disks. So always use the fixed size disks, you can see here. We found that using the fixed size, the VHDX, really delivers native to physical performance. We weren't seeing any huge changes. Also, we found with differentiating disks and dynamic disks, they're not supported. So underlying storage can be overcommitted. You actually spike your IOPS by doing it. Allocated fixed size virtual disks, you can see there's the static amount. Do not store system files. This is probably, if you're using virtualization, this is the general no-no anyway. Do not store your system files on the same drives that you're storing the actual VMs, for obvious reasons there. And we'll talk more about some of the different types of ways that you can get around that. It creates discontention issues. Here's a really important one that a lot of people don't realize. Do not use checkpointing on the virtual machines. All right, what happens is a checkpointing creates a new secondary drive, which causes reduced performance. So what happens is it creates this secondary drive, and write operations occurring on the new drive, but when it's reading off both of the drives, right? And that's where you get degradation of performance. So it'll be writing once the new drive, but it'll reading off both of them. And we saw that was a pretty significant issue there. Let's talk about the virtual IDE and SCSI. So here, obviously, the virtual IDE controller is used to boot up the actual virtual machine. All other drives can be attached then to the virtual SCSI controller. You can have up to 64 connected disks per controller, you also, per virtual machine, and you can have actually with the virtual SCSI disks, 256. So virtual SCSI supports the hot add and remove of disks. Virtual IDE does not. It actually gives you the greatest optimal performance and flexibility. And I find that most customers end up going down some type of fiber channel storage. Depending on your virtualization infrastructure, they're already gone down some fiber channel storage solution. And I'll talk a little bit more about what we did in that. So guest storage, it depends on a number of factors here. Storage could be locally attached or you could use SAN. Two methods that are provided in Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V. You can use the in-guest iSCSI or you could use the virtual fiber channel. Common best practices you can see here for the guest storage. The operating system boot drive must be mapped to the virtual IDE drive. And then SQL Server workload binaries use the virtual IDE drive or the operating system drive when they spin up. And then guest servers need to move between the hosts, then iSCSI targets can be directly exposed to the guest server to do that. Let's get a little bit more into the host requirements. I've sort of briefly talked about this, but we'll go into a bit more detail. So host requirements don't over-allocate on your CPU. It's got to be one-to-one. Here's an interesting one, and I get this question a lot. Mixing physical and virtual. So I can have a user pool. The front ends can be virtual, and it's done by the pool at the pool level, and the back end can be physical, right? So I could have virtualized user pool, I could have physical mediation servers, I could have virtual edges, right? You can mix it, but it's done at the pool level, right? Don't, if you've got a pool of edges, then they all have to be virtualized. You can't have the, that separate. That's a, another important point. Physical to virtual CPU ratio here, so you shouldn't this is about oversubscription, so don't oversubscribe. Don't oversubscribe the CPU cores running on the Link server, media workloads, not supported and not recommended for other. Yeah, the big one we found with oversubscription, we tried all these different things to see the effects, and the media, we found media really just was starving. We were getting jitter, we were getting a lot of issues when we started oversubscribing, and then having other activities, because you'll see in the stress tool, I can run other concurrent activities at the same time I'm doing a conference or I'm doing audio video, and we started seeing jitter as a result of it. Antivirus, you can see that I only deploy antivirus software on the VM host root partition. There's actually a knowledge base article, and it's been around since 2010 that says, you know, here are the exceptions that you put in when you're actually doing your antivirus for Link server. Some other host requirements, the host redundancy. So obviously your environment should be fully redundant. Virtualization, and I've got to stress this, is not your HADR strategy. Everyone's gone very quiet now as a result of that one. I'll say it again. Virtualization is not your HADR strategy, right? People get very, I don't know why they think of it like that, right? And as you know, Link Server provides that capability, right? We have HA. We have HA through when one front end goes, we can actually go up through Windows Fabric, we can have other front ends being supported and help the traffic. From a DR perspective, we have two paired pools, we can fail over to the other pool, right? So we have that HADR strategy built into our product. Don't use virtualization to try and do that. Host networking, this is a really important one, that each host must have a dedicated network adapter. That is the host side I'm talking about. You'll have the host adapter, and then you'll have adapters for the guests, right? And I'll talk a little bit what you can do with that. Shared usage not supported, so sharing through that one adapter. Correct sizing should also handle the workload on the server. We've got a knowledge base article about NIC teaming. So if you're doing NIC teaming in your physical world, it's the same thing that applies here. Also, if you can also enable VLAN tagging on the host NIC, and then implement multiple VLANs for the guest-optimized network traffic between your front ends to clients and to the back ends. All right, so we actually did that a lot. We do that in Link Online, and we actually also do it in our lab when we did this work. A couple of things to think about. VMQ is still supported, so if you've got VMQ, obviously you need to have network cards that support the VMQ. You need the VMQ driver, obviously, and Intel Broadcom are the two VMQ support. Also, too, from the back-end server perspective, we do support and implement is the multipath I/O. So you can do that to your storage back-end server, so you can support the MPIO. Guest requirements. So the guest core requirements here. So Hyper-V doesn't have any limitations with Server 2012 Hyper-V on the number of CPU cores with Server 2012. Other third-party hypervisors may be limited to 8 cores. We have the website, which is the SVVP server. I'll get it right. Server virtualization. Can't remember the rest. Program. It's a website. You go there, and you'll see the other hypervisors listed and the products that they support. And definitely go there if you're thinking of using any other one. Most common one, and I'm going to ask this question, who's using VMware? About half. Right. So don't oversubscribe. VMware, they'll tell you to oversubscribe. Don't oversubscribe. All the things that you saw here for around oversubscription applies for VMware as well. There's no difference, right, with it. Guest operating systems, you can see there. Obviously, the preferred one is 2012 R2. And we have also 2008 R2 as well. So let's talk about the legacy versus synthetic virtual NICs. So here, the legacy adapter actually uses lower data transfer as a result. It emulates the 21140-based PCI fast Ethernet adapter. So usually it's about 1 gigabit or faster. Preferred is the synthetic adapters.
The reason for this is that they have a dedicated VM bus directly, and this allows you to plumb from the guest. And this was a new feature actually in Server 2012 R2, Server 2012 Hyper-V, is it plumbs directly the guest through this bus directly to the hardware. So this is sort of like the new improved version of VMQ is the way to think about it. You don't need to have drivers. You don't have to keep them up to date, because I remember in 2008 R2 and Server 2010 was people forgetting to update their VMQ drivers, and they were getting problems, network problems, and they were saying, what's going on with my guests? And I said, did you update your drivers? And they're like, a while ago. And so that was really one where they get burnt. So what the Microsoft did here was they said, we're going to get rid of the VMQ drivers and we're going to take care of that ourselves. And that's what the VM bus allows us to do, the virtual to physical NIC communication. We also tested the SRIOV. Again, it's available only in Windows Server 2012. It provides the extensions to PCI devices like network adapters to have separate access, which creates essentially a virtual switch. The big thing you need to know about server, who uses SRIOV now, today? Nobody, okay. Interesting. Big one with that is make sure that if you've got existing hardware and you want to support this, to contact your hardware manufacturer, the hardware provider, because it does require BIOS updates. When we originally got our HP hardware, we were like, great, we're going to use this and everything like that, and we're like, it's not working, it's gone. And then we called HP and they said, oh, you need to update your BIOS to support this. It was there, we ordered it with it, but just couldn't leverage it because the BIOS was out of date. And we updated the BIOS and everything started working. So that's probably the big one to just note. Make sure you got up-to-date BIOS. Guest requirements here, IP version 4 and IP version 6. You can have one or the other. Don't mix it. Just because the way it's traversing through the network stack between and translation, it causes performance issues if you're doing a lot of translation. So pick either IPv4 or IPv6 and go from that. Obviously disable the virtual DVD and CD drives in the guest. What happens is that it allocates resources to the guest to those drives. If you're not using them, turn them off. You don't need to use them. And that's a common one too. So let's talk about some of you are already using 2013. I saw some of you come from 2010. Architectural changes here. So on the back-end database, really what we've done here is we're no longer storing any real-time data stored in about the link pool. So we've basically shifted a lot of the workload off the back-end and then onto the front-ends. Really all it does now is just provide the persistent blob storage of data from the front-end servers. This is very different from 2010. And really the front ends now, its role is to really handle transactions for the servers. And then our AV conferencing server is part of the front end server role now. It no longer separates the monitoring or archiving server role. So there were some pretty significant changes. As a result of that, obviously the hardware requirements went up. Right, that's why we have the hex core, dual hex core with 32 gig of RAM on the front end. We shifted all those workloads, all that functionality down onto the front ends. The other one to note too, I was just thinking from the AV conferencing too, is that the H.264 codec for video requirement is for video. So this runs on the front end as well. So a lot of codec work is happening as well on the front end. So that chews up a lot of resources. And why I'm calling that one out is one of the things when you go into the link stress tool and you start saying how many AV conferencing are you going to have, by that number you'll see some spike, and you'll see this in some graphs that I'll show you, the spike in CPU. When it spins up on the actual what we call ramp up and doing those tests. So here if we look at our sizing, our Hyper-V guests, you can see that the guest here, you know, you could have the 4 cores, the 12 cores. Really if I break it down a bit here, so used for the link roles, front end, back ends, and standard edition, you can virtualize standard edition. I've been talking a lot about enterprise edition. Can virtualize all standard edition supported. And you can see here the guest has got the 12 cores, 32 gig of RAM. You at least want to have a number of spindles to support on the disk, both on C and D as an example here. And your network, you know, a dedicated network card for that. And there's the link down the bottom to the hardware requirements. hang on, it's that part. For the Edge servers and directors, who's still got directors out there? Yep. Okay. So here's on the directors, 8 cores, 16 gig, again, very similar disk spindle configuration and the 1 gig. And then this is an interesting one. So you actually have to have client machines. It could be one big, we cheated a little bit, but you can do this as well. Is what we did was we set up a number of guests that actually acted as clients and ran the stress, acted as the stress agents on the stress tool that we hit against our front end pool and various other elements in the topology. And so generally what you can do, a couple of different things. You can use just one big guest and have running the stress agents on, or you can have multiple guests and have multiple stress agents running on it. This is acting as a client, simulating the client load. So sizing it, scaling the roles here. On the server side front ends, scale the fastest. So here you can see the amount of users in the front end. You look at the back end, it can scale with that pool count, so you can go up to 40,000 users. And also the edge server will scale with that pool count. And then the stress agent, per stress agent, so per unit, you'll get about 2,500 users per agent. So if you're going to go above that, you're going to have multiple agents to cater for that. All right, so let's get into the meat of this, what we did. So here is the important things. We did multiple tests. We would actually run first at it was 35,000 users. We'd run a test, we'd see it, then we'd run another test, and then we ran one more on the high counts because we just wanted to see what was happening. And then we started ratcheting down the user base to see what would happen and where we got in the sweet spot. And there's a couple of reasons why, and you'll see that shortly. So the optimum solution we found with our current hardware, and you'll see the bill of materials just in the next slide, is around about 10,000 users. This was on a 3 front end, virtualized, right? 3 front end. You've got to have 3s because for the minimum quorum for Windows Fabric, right? And then what happened though, running that on that 3 front end user pool, it did create or produce a high resource utilization. CPU was consistently at 80%, consistently, and you'll see that in some graphs so I got it as well. However, we looked at some of the other KHI limits and we said that sustained 80% was okay if you took all of the KHIs, the key health indicators, and it fell within that crucial range that we deemed okay. Just because I'm showing you, this is not the magic template. You don't take this and go, okay, that's what Microsoft said, and I'm going to go and... No, I'm going to caveat that right now. You need to go and test it, right? I'm just showing you what we did and what we observed and giving you the information so you're armed with that information when you walk into your lab, walk into your pilot, and you actually start doing this, right? This is not the golden template from Microsoft, all right? And part of that, too, is that hardware changes, right? It keeps changing. And so HP took these guides and they're off going doing their as their next generation hardware and they're looking at, okay, what happens with Link on our new hardware, right? They're constantly, and they're going to produce white papers as a result. And also too is the user model. I don't know what your user model is out there. I don't know how many conferences you have per day, per hour, right? We took the default user model, right, which you could also run as your baseline and then build from that. That's essentially what we did. So here's the bill of materials. Pardon the slide. It is a pretty busy slide. I'll call out some key things that we found with this. So we virtualized everything. So we didn't just pick Link. We actually virtualized everything. So you can see here, and I'll look a bit closer. So WAC, and I always forget this. This is the Office Web Applications Farm. I call it WAC because that was the internal name, sorry. So you can see that was virtualized. Our Active Directory was virtualized. Everything here was pretty much virtualized here. You can see that we've got the, hopefully this is working. Nope. I'll use the mouse pointer. So here's our stress agents, our internal clients that we're running on that. Here's the WAC, here Active Directory. We've got our back ends. We've also got front ends. We then had our DMZ reverse proxy. We had our edges. Then we had additional stress client machines. So what we tried to simulate here is both outside clients coming in and also internal clients. So we tried to simulate both in an aspect here. And then if you look at the hardware here, we had the HP DL560s, the Gen 8 hardware. You can see the amount of cores. They were at Xeon. Then you can see, in fact, how we laid out the memory configuration. We had both internal storage, which is the 300 gig SAS drives, 15K SAS drives, and then we went to external storage, the 600 gig 6G SAS 15K drives. And then you can see the network adapters. So this is an example of that. So what we did for the local host, logical host configuration, so each virtual server was configured with 12 cores, 32 gig of memory was allocated. Again, what we used here was the physical sizing document. We didn't go and do anything fancy or anything like that. We took exactly what the physical was and dropped it straight in. Set it to 12 cores, 32 gig of RAM for each of the virtual servers. So host storage configuration, this gives you an idea of what was internal, what was external, showing you the various disks, showing the capacity. And here's an interesting one on the IOPS. So here you can see the IOPS aspect. Because SQL Server is running everywhere, it is IOPS bound. You've got to be really conscious about your reads and writes. Be really conscious about how much IOPS you're doing based on your traffic as well. And I'll talk a bit more about the key health indicators that highlight that. So what do we do with the placement? So here, guest machines were spread across hosts in the order to test performance. We co-located to specific roles. We didn't really test that. We used a logical separation of roles. This is a pretty obvious one, but I've had, believe it or not, customers do this. We did not place FEs together on the same host. Why would you think that would be a bad idea? I'm seeing a few smiles and shaking the head. I've had customers do it, right? There's your great HADR strategy there. Lose the host, physical host, and you've lost all your FEs. All right, so also you can keep virtual servers in the same pool to improve improves resilience here. So you can see our hosts, and then what we did was we then allocated the logical processes based on that host and then where we put the front ends and back ends. So you notice we put the front ends and back ends, we put them really pretty much separate on separate hosts, our edges, and then you saw that's our client stress clients, and then you can see our domain controllers for the OWA support. So we had Exchange. Exchange was virtualized as well for the OWA and for conversational history. We virtualized that. And then we also reserved some space here as well. We didn't use all of them up. So let's talk about Link Stress Tool ramp up, this really important one. So throughout the testing process, we found when we kicked the agents in, there was a ramp up time. It took about 30 minutes as it spun up all the clients. Think of it like a Monday morning when your organization, they come to work and they all log on to Link, right? And then everything has to spin up and they'll just maybe just spin up for their presence formation, they'll start having an IM conversation, they may have a conference that happens. We try to simulate that ramp up as well that comes here. And what we found was during the ramp up, the following occurred here, that the Link Stress Tool is loading all its configuration files, and I'll show you the different configuration files. And again, what I highlighted was users are logging in. Also, too, is the back end as well as the front ends are doing some background tasks as well to cater for that load. All right, so that was another part. So here's a good example of the ramp up. All right, so this was actually percent processor time that was happening on the multiple processors for a given instance. In this case, it was the FE. And you can see here that here is that ramp up spike that happened. And then things started settling down. Remember I mentioned earlier that we were within the 80% utilization here, within the critical KHI limits, and you can see just the amount of traffic that's actually occurring on the amount of CPU utilization that's occurring as we spun up and did the stress. So let's talk about SQL Express. SQL Express is installed on the front end. One of the things is that on the first four CPUs, we saw that they remained hot, high utilization over time. They stayed at very high utilization. And where we found it was associated with the RTC Local SQL Server Express Edition instance. And here is the important part, why we saw that. So SQL Server Express Edition can only use the first four logical processors. And you're probably saying, what? Why is that? Someone in marketing had a great idea. We don't want to cannibalize the Enterprise Edition product where everyone will run SQL Server Express and not go to SQL Server Enterprise Edition. So let's hard bound it to the first four logical CPUs in Express. That's what they did. So here you can see that with if you're getting sustained over 90% utilization and capacity, utilization of the CPU, and we found that with FEs, we're already running at full capacity. From a SQL Server Express viewpoint, one way that you can mitigate it is you add another front end. So we could have gone to four front ends, five front ends, six front ends to really reduce that utilization, that CPU utilization. That was the only way that you can do that, given that the SQL Server Express is bound to those first four logical processes. Also, too, is that we Link Server is actually optimized to utilize those four cores as well with SQL Server Express. So when it's computing, it's using those four. Two key health indicators that you can look at here is the queue latency and Sprock latency. And what's happening here is that the queue latency is the amount of time in milliseconds it takes the request to leave the front end's queue, right, towards the back end database. So that's queue latency. And then Sprock latency is the amount of time it takes for SQL Server database to process that request. Right? So really what you're using those two to do is to measure the effect of SQL Server has on CPU utilization. This is all in white paper, so I'm not, you're not missing out on anything. I'm just calling out these main things. Right, so queue latency, Sprock latency. Queue latency, really easy to think about, going from the time in milliseconds from the front end to the back end, right? And then Sprock latency is the amount of time that it takes SQL Server database to process that request. Yes? Correct. Correct. Yeah, for any database activities, the first four are utilized for SQL Server Express, and we've optimized to use that. If you've got, obviously, if it's front end, then you've got AV conferencing and things like that going, it's going to use those additional cores to do that work, right? First four plus addition. Right? Because if it's a database transaction and there's a transaction that's happening, then it's going to use that, right? It's got to process what the user request is coming in. So the user says, I want to have a conference. All right, it's going to set up what that state is that user, and the presence information has to change, and so forth. You might want to use the microphone here, if somebody was supposed to be coming around with a microphone. Sorry. So the question was, and let me repeat the question so that people know, what happens to the other logical processes that have been assigned to that virtual guest? So if the first four are being used by Link Server from a database perspective, does it use anything more beyond that? And the answer is yes. It uses those four plus additional. So if you've got a user that is setting up an AV conference, it's going to obviously you have to spin the details up about that user and store the information about that conference, as well as then as the conference kicks in and starts doing whether it be audio or video, it's going to utilize the other cores to be able to provide that codec and that support for that. So it's using all of them. But in specific data, anything that's to do with the database, touching the database, it's only the first four.
Yeah, okay. So additional question. What we see in the production is that actually the first four cores are really utilized maybe for 70-80%, and all the rest is maximum 10%. So we deployed with 12 cores, but it got me thinking if, for example, 8 was not enough, because if you can squeeze those 8 cores to 4 and remain this SQL that would remain on the same level because it is solely for SQL Express stuff and no AV computing is done there. So why 12 in such a case?
So it depends on what your, I don't know what your default user, what your user profiling was. I don't know what you had configured as the amount of conferences, the amount of IM messages. You know, it varies from that. Like it's, I don't know what your environment, what you were testing it for to really answer, you know, beyond that, the 20% on the additional cores that you highlighted there. It
Yeah, it really depends on what workloads you were using, how you're using them, so forth. Sorry, mm-hmm. There's not a clear answer to that, because it really says, well, how many users actually were using it? I'm in presence. How many actual IM messages were happening? How many conferences were set up? How long do those conferences run for? It's all those variables that actually affect this as well. And that's why, like I said in a few slides earlier, you need to test this.
Yeah, okay, thank you. As long as like no other thing than SQL is going on the first four, then we can just optimize. But I was not sure if the, for example, AV computing doesn't take all 12 and such. Yeah, thanks.
Sure. No problem. So here's a good example of here. Here's the Sprock latency and queue latency that's happening on the front end. So with this, you can see that what we've done is, this is the RTC local SQL instance that's running on the front end. We've got instances of, you can see the instances on these. So we've got 0.0, I think was it, 0.1, 0.2, 0.3. And then we can see that the four processes are highly utilized during testing here. This is, you can see here that with what we were doing some analysis on is that CPU utilization across all cores were allocated, and it wasn't the total average, but you can see the effects of that when we did the testing. While it was under load, around about 90% utilization we were seeing here, it still fell within relative ranges for KHI values to SQL Express. One of the things you'll notice here too in this particular space here is that's the ramp up occurring. You notice after ramp up, it starts settling down. So you always got that ramp up that happens in about 30 minutes. I think what else is here? Yeah. The spikes that are happening, it's really, that's when significant activities were happening in the event. And notice that it's been straight down as well. So if you had users logging in and their presence information was trying to get set up in the client, that was some of the spikes that you'll see happening on the front ends to deliver that presence information, as an example. All right, so let's talk about the stress tooling that we have. We have a user provisioning tool. There's two tools here. The first one is a user provisioning tool. What this does is this goes off and creates users and groups, enables those users for link, generates the contact lists, and also creates test location information. It pretty much goes, and I'll talk about this and demo to you. It goes in and you put obviously your FQDN name, and then you can prefix what the test users are and the passwords, and then what your SIP domain, your account domain, what the OU that you're going to have, if it's voice enabled, then the actual area code, and then the number of users that you want to have. The next page on that is the contacts creation. So how many contacts per user do you want to have, and is it fixed? All right, what's the average contacts groups per user? If you've got any federation as well, and the federation details. We didn't do anything on federation in our tests, just to let you know. But one thing you can see there in the note there, that average contacts per user will increase the subscriptions per user and increase process utilization on the link front ends. So be conscious of this. Download the default user profile. It's actually on TechNet. And use that as your baseline, and then from that start tweaking it based on what your needs are for your customers or for your users. Next one here is in the user provisioning tool is we can go in there and put the number of available machines for the client machine settings. Here's the user settings we're going and putting here. So the number of users. This allows you to specify the stress agents, the service discovery, what modalities you want to test. You also can set load variables, such as the number and the frequency of PSTN calls. So here in the provisioning tool, you can do things such as setting the load level. I'll talk a little bit more about this shortly. What load level you want to set. There's some gotchas with this tool in this part. It's interesting, and I'll show you what that's about. So be mindful that the features you enable here and how you configure them. One thing that we did find is reach clients. If you really start pushing the reach clients up, we found that it pushed the process utilization on the front ends to like 80 and 80 plus percentage utilization with reach clients. Be really conscious of that one. If you do have a lot of reach clients, then and this was in our lab was only with three front ends, you need to put another front end in. You don't have a choice with rich clients. There's a gotcha too in the stress tool that we discovered, and we fixed it. And I'll show you where to fix it. It's in the XML file. It's not exposed through the UI to do with authentication. All right, let's go into this demo. So I'm just firing up the tools here. This is the first tool we got, and I'll go into that shortly, is the load configuration tool. And then we've got the user provisioning tool. So the first tool you have to use is obviously you have to provision the users. All right? So you're going to provision the users, and then you're going to actually then put the load on the user. Now, this particular one, the provisioning, the actual can be done at your workstation, and you're provisioning against Active Directory. Right? The actual configuration tool, this can also be done, but what it does is it goes and creates a folder, and I'll show you here. These are all the client configurations, so I actually have to go in, and I'll talk about this, and copy those folders to each of the stress clients that I want to run. And you can see they're all numbered there, right? So I showed you this earlier. This is going through and creating a distribution list, the contact creation, your location info information as well. So after you, first thing you do is provision your users. The next thing you do is you go into the load configuration, number of machines you want to have, then the details here you can see the number of users, the start index of the users, the user domain, any access proxy settings, both for internal and external network settings. The general scenarios here, so instant messaging. So you can turn this on. Now, let's talk about these settings here. So there's low, medium, and fine, and high, and there's custom. So if you look at it, high is obviously going to use 100%. Oh, let me kill that. I don't want that going. There we go. So yeah, high is obviously 100%. Medium is 60% of the load, and low is 30%. So 30, 60, 100. Now custom. So custom here, I can go in and I can say external, I want conferencing and large conferencing, and I want to go into the advanced settings here. And I can go in here and start putting some advanced settings. Is what's my two-party conversation percentage? How many conversations per hour do I want to have? Do I want to invite users in the contact list? I can go and set that setting. Conversation length in seconds. So you're generating this traffic. You're generating the load to understand what's going on. And again, take what the default user profile is off the web at TechNet, take that as your baseline, and then run the baseline first. Just run your baseline first because I don't know what your network configuration is like in your lab or in your pilot, and you just want to get that baseline. You want to establish, okay, what is the load going to be if I just run with the default user profile? Then start tweaking it and making the incremental changes based on your organization. And you can see you can go a lot of, I'm not going to go through all of these settings, but you can see just the amount of settings that are happening here. And then it's just going through the three settings here. And I just want to try something. Where was it? There's a bug that does something weird here. Let's see if I can do it. Yeah, so notice I can go and I can say it's disabled on the load, but I can still go in and set the advanced options. You can change it still, yeah. So interesting, all right, don't get caught with that, it's disabled, and then you can actually go and set your advanced options where you may want to do the custom, then go and do your advanced. Just a little gotcha in the tool, because you're disabling it, even though you can still bring up the advanced window. So make sure you put the custom and then go into this. You'll get caught otherwise. Then other things, I can go to my voice scenarios here. So the load level that I want to have for VoIP, a PSTN gateway level, conferencing attendant, if you're using the call park service, and then also with your mediation, you go in and start adding your mediation server, FQDN, the port, and so forth for your mediation.
Here's the reach. So here are the additional reach settings that you want. So here right now it's got Kerberos. All right, that should be NT, I'll spell it right. Make sure it's NT, your SIP auth method is actually NTLM. Now, here's another gotcha. I went and put it in here. It won't take it. There's a bug in the tool. It won't, even though I typed it in here and said I want to use this, and I go close, it won't save it. So what I have to do, and I'll just take one client as an example here, and if I go down to the Reach IM client config, and I open this up, let's do it in Notepad. Big enough for everyone to read. All right, what I'm looking for is, where is it? I had it there. Yeah. This is not the same config file that I just changed. You need to go and change that. It'll say Kerberos. Even though you say NTLM in the tool, it'll still be Kerberos in the XML file. Make sure you change this to NTLM. What happens, though, is also, too, is that if it's not changed, it'll seem like your reach clients are not working. Like, we spend about 3 days working. What? Hang on, we said it. It's not working. Well, the reach client's connecting. So I went and talked to our performance guys. We have a perf lab. I went and had a chat with those guys who wrote this tool, and I said, all right, debug it for us. What's going on? This is frustrating. And so they debugged it, and then they discovered that was the problem. It's meant to be NTLM and not Kerberos. All right. Then you get to go and set the mobility settings for the UCWA and set the load, and then you get a summary of what changes have been happen on that. And then you save them. Generate the files, and what that does is when it generates the files, it goes off and generates the build of the client, and then it builds all the clients for you. So it'll generate these folders. So how do you run it? I'm going to talk about that next, actually. So testing methodology, make sure that your environment is functional, obviously. That's going to create skewed results. One of the things I recommend too, and I know it's hard because you don't have this, you know, you're not Microsoft with all these extra networks that you can just spin up things and so forth. One of the challenges you have is, you know, trying to isolate the amount of traffic so that you're minimizing the amount of traffic so that you're keeping it in a very pristine environment that you can run your baseline and run your tests in. It's hard, I know. Maybe you use your VLAN and try and do that, you're still not going to get the best pristine environment. Run your test for at least 24 hours. We were running our test for 24 hours. It was lucky because the group of us, we had a couple of people in Australia who actually was running the test for us while we were sleeping in Redmond. So it was great to have that international and say, hey, run the test for me. And then we would run the test for 24 hours and then we'd run the test again. In some cases, there were, we were having problems with the reach issue. We actually ran more tests to see. And basically use the control clients. So try and have nothing else happening on those clients. You can either use a couple of different ways. You can use a physical client, a physical machine running the stress agent. You could run a guest like we did and actually run multiple stress clients. Again, 2,400 users. You've got to think about per stress agent. You've got to factor that in. So running the tests. So what you do here is obviously I generated the files. So you're going to get once they're created, that directory is for each stress agent. So each directory corresponds, as I mentioned earlier. So how do you run it? So here's actually, you'll get a batch file that's inside that folder in each client folder. And you'll actually then say run the batch file and then the location where the stress tool. And it'll run the actual stress. And then you'll run specific tests such as one for IM, you can do it individually. So let me switch back and just show you this actually quickly. So if I go here, I've noticed that I've got Reach. I've got my Reach clients here. I've got my RGS. I also have IM. So you've got to run each of those XML files. So you're going to run the link perf tool with the file and the actual XML file that you're going to run. The batch file, let me just show you in the batch file because this is actually does all of this heavy lifting for you. So you notice here it's actually going in and doing all of that work for you, running those different XML files. Let me just enlarge that too. So the batch file does all of that work, but just I always like saying what's, you know, happening under the covers and let you guys know what's going on there. So the Link Server Stress and Performance Tool, or LSS as it's known as, it's a validation tool set. So you can perform stress testing on a targeted deployment infrastructure. You can target a specific pattern, as you saw earlier. You can simulate individual workloads, such as just IAM presence, or another workload. You use the provision you use and simulate the user models and user loads. This is a really big one, and I was surprised, and I always ask this question, is how many people know about this tool? Excuse me, because it allows you to have proper design and proper deployment. You really now understand what's going to happen in your production environment by using this tool. All right, it's generally performed, and this is the hard one, it's generally performed after you've done your technical design, but before you go out and pilot. Now, it's hard if you've only got one environment and your environment is the piloting environment. So what I tell folks is before you commission your user into that pilot environment, then run the tool if you have no option. However, recommendation is to deploy into a lab because it's a controlled environment. You're not getting any other artificial noise that's coming in from other activities. And again, I highlight that request of the client. It requires the clients for stress testing. With the proper design and deployment, some of the other things to think about is what's your Active Directory infrastructure going to look like? Certificate services. Are you using internal certificate authority or external? So what's your certificates? You know, wildcarding and so forth. Office web application server, right? What's your load balancer and your proxy? You're using this tool not only just to say, well, how's my Link server, but it's also validating your actual infrastructure as well and factor that piece in. So let's talk about key health indicators. What constitutes a good pass? So I'm the type of person who likes to have that sort of the Letterman's, you know, top Dave Letterman's talk show in the US, what's my top 10 list, right? What are the top 10 things I need to know about when I'm about to do this? And really, we because it's a quick pass, you know, because we're running multiple passes, we wanted to see, right, what is a good pass? And then we could, and if we found it wasn't a good pass, then we could dive in further and find out why, and then make some modifications, and then run that test again. So it provides space for a good pass. It allows the ease of checking. All the indicators in each turn. If testing reveals no issues in the 10 top KHIs, then generally you don't have to go a step further. However, if you do want to go in, there's about 80 of them. There's a full KHI set, which you can see it's in the network planning and monitoring and troubleshooting documentation. So there's a link there too to go and get that. So what are the top 10? So if you look at the top 10 here, you can see the first one obviously is CPU utilization. Right, to process information. It's generally to be in the healthy range, less than 80%, right, on the highest core. The next one you've got is available memory in megabytes here, less than 20% of the total system of memory. The physical disk is your disk reads and your writes. So you can see here, less than 10 milliseconds green, less than 10 to 25 yellow, and greater than 25 milliseconds is red. One of the things too is look at the other with your disk latency, it's represented in milliseconds, and if you look at it in the details here, so for OLTP databases, the lower this number, the better, but especially if disks are holding a transaction log and whatever maintenance you're doing around the transaction logs, cleaning up your transaction, truncating your logs. Then you've got the queue latency and Sprock latency. We talked about that earlier. So less than 100 milliseconds sustained on either of those is a healthy range. Your page life expectancy in SQL Server, your buffer manager there. So you want less than 300, all right, which is about 5 minutes. And then the other two there you've got is your RTC memory manager, your total service memory, less than 80% of the physical memory. And then also the last one is your, because it's .NET apps, for reach, less than 80%.
So other things in performance monitoring, and this is sort of, I try to break this up in actually into roles to give you an idea of what you're looking at in that particular role if you need to go down to the next level beyond the 10 KHIs. You now got the KHI document, we've got about 80 of them. You're now starting to drop into a lot more detail. What does that mean? So here you've got, you can see the various, what's made up on the front-end servers and what you're really then concerned about. So you've got your ASAV MCU, and obviously you're looking at the MCU health state. So the performance counters, less than 2. Your web components, so you can see there, like the ABWQ, 1-0 for them. Authentication errors, less than 1 second. Your SIP stack, so you can see the various counters there, performance counters, looking at the SIP stack, lists, and SQL. And then you can see the actual CPU, disk, and memory. This is happening on the front-end servers. This really allows you to do more detailed analysis to understand, is your services in this front-end at a healthy state? So I'm not going to go into these too a lot of detail, but you can see some of the performance counters here and what you're looking at. All right. So we've got time for some questions, but what I really wanted to, hopefully you're going to walk away here with getting an understanding of just how to size Link Server 2013 for virtualization, how we did it. And again, it's not the gold standard for you just to take and go and do that. Make sure you test it. All right. Remember that also virtualization is not your HADR strategy. I want to say that one as well. We also looked at key KHIs, the key health indicators and performance metrics, and also our approach and our recommendation around testing and stressing and using the Link Stress tool. Yes, sir. We've got a microphone coming down too. So, and if you want to, you can also get a microphone over here if you want to stand up as well. It works.
So you mentioned that when you carry out these tests, that you like to create a sandbox, a lab environment.
That's correct.
The thing that strikes me is actually as a systems integrator, trying to convince customers they should pay for us to carry this out before a pilot, before a light straight into live deployment.
Right.
In your experience, how easy was it to genuinely create an environment similar to the customer? Because I was just thinking things like when you're creating those stress agents.
Yep.
So if my customer's got 700 employees, how do I do the math to make sure I've got the right number of stress agents? And I know there are variables that you can't tell, like how many calls they're going to make or conferences.
Sure.
So there's a finger in the air there, but...
Yeah, one of my early slides, it was 2,400 users per stress agent.
Yeah.
So you get away with one stress agent and setting up your default user profile and then tweaking it as you see fit. So that's one point. The early question you asked around the networking aspect of it and how do we get around it. We're a little bit more fortunate because we went to the engineering excellence centers. These are the ones where they bring you guys into it, and Microsoft does, and they say, hey, we're going to build your environment and we're going to go through it together. And we actually used one of those environments to actually do it. The challenge, and I think where you're coming from is the challenge is how do I have an environment that I can walk through with the customer and give them an idea of what's going on, right? Not just yourself, right? How do I educate the customer on this? And that's definitely, as a systems integrator, that's what you want to do. You want to hold their hand and they understand the environment and so forth. If they've already have the pilot there before they go live, you could use that pilot environment. Though there's got to be some factors. If you've got other network traffic happening, then you've got to factor that in. How much utilization is happening? Do I have quads? Can I use quads as a way of reducing the amount of traffic? So I got that. You know, I'm going to dedicate some network traffic specifically for the testing that I'm going to do. So there are some options to do that. You just got to be smart about it and just be conscious that there is other things going on in that pilot before we actually pull the trigger and say, all right, we're going to go live. I understand you don't have this dedicated environment to go and do that, so that may be an option to do that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Other questions? Wow, no other questions. I did this at TechEd in North America, and it was lots of questions. That means you guys understand it now. No, you're going to go back and read the white paper. Good. And you're going to download the linked stress tools. Yeah, those people who don't understand or wasn't conscious of those tools, now you are. So, yeah. We've got a microphone. We've got questions firing. Good.
With the undersupported hypervisors, I missed VMware there.
Sorry?
In the list of supported hypervisors, I missed VMware.
Right. Good question. This is from a Microsoft perspective where we validated our, obviously, Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V, R2 Hyper-V. It is up to the VMware to go and test and validate their platform with our product. And they have there's a website called the SVVP. You go there and they'll tell you what version is validated, whether it's ESX server or whatever the version of ESX server is supported and so forth. And they actually do that work.
I was calling about Microsoft support for this environment.
Right. So from a support point of view, for VMware, it's obviously you go to VMware. If it's a link product issue, then normally what happens is that if you've got PSS or a person who's handling your account, they'll send that they're having this issue. Generally what we tell PSS is that we will try and reproduce the problem on Hyper-V, not on VMware, because we don't have VMware, and we'll see if there's an issue with the product, an issue, a hot fix. So generally what we try to do then is get the variables. That's one thing that's having this data now is you can come back and have that conversation with PSS that you couldn't have before, right? PSS would say, are you following just this? And you go, yeah, but I'm doing this as well. And they'll be like, oh, hang on a minute, are you doing this? Well, I'm not supported. And you're like, what? So now they have that paper, you guys have that paper, they can say, what are you seeing? Is it above 80% utilization? How many front ends do you have? What other performance counters can you share with me? So you can get into a lot more detailed discussion, then it helps us as a product group go, all right, what are they seeing? What's the customer seeing? Let's go into our perf lab and go and simulate that environment and simulate those issues. And then it helps us determine whether it's a bug on our side or a bug in VMware. I hope that answered your question.
Okay, thank you.
No problem.
Are there any special requirements to run stress agents from the internet to test the edge infrastructure?
Are there special requirements, like as in the machine to run the stress agent on? Is that what you're highlighting? They're asking. Like what operating system and so
well,
forth?
Anything that differs from the stress agent that is placed inside the corporate network.
So the easiest way to think of it from a stress agent perspective, it's like a client.
I see.
It's like a big Uber client. And instead of one client, you're running for one user, you're running 2,500 users. So it takes you obviously want to make sure you can size that client. That's why we put the stress agents in Hyper-V guests for that reason. Because A, we didn't have that many stress agents, physical machines lying around. In fact, when we built it out, we were really restricted on the amount of hardware that we got. And it was about, don't quote me, HP will hate me, it was like $256,000 for the hardware, US, for the hardware, I think, when we purchased it at the time. And yes, $256,000, yeah, round about that. It was a while ago.
Was that less price you would have paid? No, you don't have to
answer. I don't know. I don't know. I'm just, yeah, that's the price it appeared to me that I had to budget for.
Mine's just a quick one. The bugs that you were demoing in the stress test tool,
yes.
Are they going to be resolved anytime soon or?
No.
Okay,
that's
cool.
That's why I showed them to you.
Thanks.
That's a very
Thanks for the honest answer there.
Yep. Sorry. Yes, I'm going to just leave it at that. I've got to be careful. Got to be careful. No, they're not going to get fixed, and there's reasons. Let's leave it at that.
What about reuse 10 gig connections?
Sorry?
Reuse 10 gig connections? You said dedicated NICs?
Yep.
So we've got Cisco UCS. So each host has got two 10 gig connections.
Okay, and you do NIC teaming on those?
Yeah.
I got to ask this question. Why 10 gig? Why are you running 10 gig NICs?
I'm just curious, are you, how many users are sitting on?
So we've got V-blocks.
Okay.
So the VCV blocks.
Yep.
So the whole fabric.
Okay. I see that. Yeah. One thing that was interesting is we were really worried when we first kitted this out that we were originally going to ask for 10 gig NICs. And one of the things was the multi-view. We thought that the multi-view was going to chew a lot of network bandwidth up, and it actually didn't. When we were talking to the developers, we were saying, okay, so should we get a 1 gig or 10 gig? Like, and they said, yeah, we haven't seen that high network utilization on multi-view. And it was good. You know, they really optimized it for the 1 gig. So to answer your question, you would have to test it. I couldn't give you a straight answer. I don't know, based on the default user profile. Obviously, you want to keep the host on a separate NIC. But then if you could get away with multiple guests on that 10 gig and the default user profile or whatever the characteristics are, you may be able to get away with it. And you are technically following the rules, right? I've got one NIC for the host and I've got a NIC for the guest. I've just got a big NIC for the guest. Yeah. Essentially it, right? All right. I think that's it. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.